Now, from Mayo Clinic, it's Medical Edge Weekend, the only show that gives you the chance to ask your questions to Mayo Clinic experts. Plus, we'll take you beyond the headlines for in-depth discussions of what developments in medicine mean to you. Information you want from specialists who know. Join the conversation by phone, through our blog, or on Twitter by going to radio.mayoclinic.org. Now, with this week's program, here are your hosts, Dr. Tom Shives and Tracy McRae.
From the Mayo Clinic, Rochester, Minnesota campus, I'm Dr. Tom Shives.
And I'm Tracy McRae.
Welcome, everyone, to Medical Edge Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network. Pain. Tracy, you've probably had pain before.
A time or two.
Yeah. That unpleasant sensation that we all have experienced at one time or another, or maybe a headache, a low back pain. But, you know, when you're in pain, there is probably nothing you want more than relief. Mm. Relief from the constant throbbing, the stinging, the aching. And, you know, a lot of patients I see come in with a chief complaint of pain. So we know it's out there. And fortunately, for most kinds of pain, secondary to injuries and illnesses, given time and maybe some over-the-counter medication or a heating pad, or I think you like the hot water bottle.
I like the hot rice bag.
Well, yeah, that's the one where somebody used it on their feet and burned their feet.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, for some people, the pain never goes away, and that can make your life miserable. Now, if you suffer from chronic pain, you are not alone. It's estimated that there are, believe it or not, some 50 million Americans who are in essentially constant pain.
Today on Medical Edge Radio, we'll meet two pain experts, anesthesiologist Dr. Tracy Harrison and psychologist Dr. Barbara Bruce. They both work in the Pain Rehabilitation Center program at Mayo Rochester. We're going to talk about the effects of pain on society. We'll tell you what causes pain and whether or not it can be all in your head.
Oh, unlikely. For you or me, don't you think?
No,
I'm sure it's possible.
No comment, Tom. Yeah. And most important, we'll talk about treatment for pain. Do you need to see a specialist? What is a pain management clinic? And what medications and modalities might be able to help? Plus, we'll give you some tips for living with chronic pain.
Should be a good hour.
I think so. But first, this week, the American Heart Association's journal Circulation posted a story about some long-range research, which began back in 1987, which shows that when you lower your risk of heart disease, you also get the added benefit of protection against cancer.
In 1987, you weren't even born then, were you?
Kind of.
I mean, this must be, I'm sure, an important study, if they've gone back that far.
It's kind of a no-brainer, but it's also great news. And the best part of this story is that it presents a consistent message for patients. Sometimes we can get a conflict there. Joining us to discuss the research is Mayo Clinic cardiologist and the medical editor of the Healthy Heart for Life, Dr. Martha Grogan. Good morning, Dr. Grogan.
Good morning.
Morning. Good to have you on the program again, Martha.
Thank you.
I doubt that you'd be surprised by the findings of this study. Is that right?
No, I'm not surprised. And actually, as you know, we've kind of been already talking about smaller studies that show this, but this is really great to have a larger study showing that all the healthy lifestyle things that prevent heart disease prevent other things such as cancer.
Do you think, I mean, you're probably in this so deep, I don't know if you can think of this as a patient, but do you think that patients can get confused by the different messages, you know, the guidelines, what to do for a healthy heart, how to risk in your list for, you know, the risk for diabetes or
high blood pressure,
yeah,
all the chronic illnesses?
They can get confused, not so much by the guidelines, but by the headlines, you know. Every day there's some new study and it says, oh, maybe this is better than that, or maybe this one really isn't so good. And I think some people tend to just throw up their hands and say, forget it, I'm just going to not do any of that stuff.
So what we've got here is really one consistent message. And if you follow these guidelines, then you're less likely to get not just heart disease, but also cancer and other chronic illnesses, right?
That's right. And I think another way people should think about it is, don't think so much about, oh, I might not get heart disease or I won't get a heart attack, because most people don't worry about that too much until they have the heart attack. Think of these as, if I do these things, I'm going to be healthy, I'm going to be able to do things with my kids, I'm going to be able to enjoy life. I think that's another message, you know, rather than always thinking of the negatives.
Sure. Yeah, I'm trying to not get diabetes. I'm trying to not get cancer. Right. I'm trying to mess with my high blood pressure.
You know, you want to be alive. You want to look good. You want to, you know, this is a message. And obviously, if you have a heart attack or you die of cancer, you're not going to be, you know, having fun and living a healthy life.
All right. So how do you be alive and look good?
Yeah, let's go over some of those guidelines.
Okay. So these simple seven things are things that we've talked about a lot, but they are: be active, get to a healthy weight, eat a healthy diet, as we say over and over again, lots of fruits and veggies. And I know you made Audrey a smoothie with all kinds of wonderful things in it today.
A bright green smoothie.
That's good. A St. Patrick's Day one at that, too. A little bit late. Control your cholesterol. Really important one is to make sure your blood pressure is controlled, because that's the silent killer. People can be walking around and don't even know they have it, and there's lots of simple treatment for it. Control your blood sugar. And the big one, too, of course, is not smoking. So those are seven things. And when we look at this study, unfortunately, only about one-tenth of the people in the group actually did all seven. So 95% of the people did six or less of these. But if you did six or more, you had 51% less risk of cancer.
It's interesting, though, to think about that, because, of course, it makes sense. If you don't want to get cancer, you shouldn't smoke. But for the first one off the list, if you don't want to get cancer, you know, exercise more.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So being active helps reduce your risk of cancer. And we've talked about it, too, how it probably reduces your risk of getting dementia, too. And we've talked about this in other times, too, that all these healthy lifestyle things for men help prevent them from getting erectile dysfunction. So there's lots of benefits. The other thing important about this study, so even though a lot of people didn't do all six, even people who did one or two had a significantly reduced risk of cancer. So even little changes can make a big difference.
Thanks, Dr. Grogan.
Yeah, no You're kidding. Welcome. The simple seven.
That's it. The simple seven. Make sure you do them.
All right, thanks,
Dr. Grogan. Right. And you know what? That's reality. And I always like that quote from Ayn Rand when she said, you can avoid reality, but you cannot avoid the consequences of avoiding reality.
Oh, okay.
All right, the simple seven. Gotta do them.
Thanks,
Dr. Grogan. Bye. All right, time for a short break. Coming up, we'll talk with pain experts Dr. Tracy Harrison and Dr. Barbara Bruce, plus myth or matter of fact. Women are much better than men when it comes to dealing with pain. That can't be true.
Oh, of course it can.
But it might be.
Myth or matter of fact, we'll get the answer coming up. And right after the news at the bottom of the hour, we'll take your questions for our pain experts at 507-282-1234. You can also contact us by going to our website, radio.mayoclinic.org, or tweet us at any time, #MayoRadio. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Radio. This week's guests are both specialists in the treatment of chronic pain, Dr. Barbara Bruce. She is a psychologist. Dr. Bruce, thanks so much for being with us. Glad to have you here. All right, and Dr. Tracy Harrison, she is an anesthesiologist who also works in the pain clinic. Dr. Harrison, welcome. Good to have you on the program.
Thanks for having us today.
This is a big problem, because I know how hard it is to get an appointment with you people in the pain management center or in the pain clinic. So I know you're busy. You see a lot of people every day who have a problem with chronic pain, right, Dr. Bruce?
Absolutely. It's one of the main reasons people come to the Mayo Clinic is chronic pain.
Now, you're a psychologist, and I don't know, as you started out treating patients with pain, but how did you get into this business?
It's actually been an interest of mine back to graduate school. So I was hired to work as a clinical director at the Pain Rehabilitation Center at Mayo.
And
quite a few years ago.
Well, not as long as I've been there, I don't think. And Dr. Tracy Harrison, you are an anesthesiologist, meaning that you help put people to sleep, and particularly in pediatrics is where you work.
Yes.
And how did you get interested in the pain angle?
So just from being an anesthesiologist and seeing patients who had surgery and had some pain after surgery, sometimes even that continues for some time after that. So I actually did a pain fellowship so that I could kind of understand that a lot better.
Well, let's talk about the kids' angle of pain management, because it's hard when you're a parent and your child complains of pain, because you don't know how much of it is. Is it this brand new pain? Is it really bad pain? How long has it been going on? How do you treat children with pain differently than adults with pain?
Yeah, that's it's a very, very good question. It's I think you have to look at some of the conventional ways to treat pain initially for these kids, and you know, you really need to make sure that they keep engaged in all the things that they need to do. It is very challenging, and that's why there are specialists, more and more of us, that treat patients with chronic pain, particular kids.
More on the psychological line of things, is that what most pain management treatment is, or what, you know, how do you... Let's just start with the children's angle first.
I mean, you're a psychologist. That suggests that there is a mental angle to this whole thing.
You know, there's a mental angle to everything as a human being. And I think that what we're looking at is most pain syndromes that persist, we don't have good answers for, and there aren't good cures for. And what we end up doing is managing the pain rather than curing it. And that's where a lot of strategies that come under rehabilitation can be very, very effective. That's really my expertise that I bring to the table, which has to do with rehabilitation, managing living with chronic symptoms.
Isn't it don't you find it interesting that there are so many kids who have chronic pain? Has that surprised you?
Actually, it is very surprising, but the numbers that you quoted earlier are even higher for children. More children have chronic pain than adults, if you can imagine that.
And is this pain everywhere, or are there more common sites where kids complain of pain?
We primarily see kids with pain that's headache, belly pain, abdominal pain, and sports injuries, sort of pain syndromes that develop after sports injuries, and sometimes these generalized pain syndromes. That's what we see. And we see probably the most severe syndromes because kids are doing a lot of things to try to get better, and after weeks, years, months, and even years, they end up at the Mayo Clinic and end up in some of our rehabilitation programs.
What percentage of these patients can you get well? Can you get over the pain syndrome? Dr. Harrison?
So, for example, our involvement in the pediatric pain rehabilitation program, very, very good, excellent results. I mean, many of these kids, the majority of these children are not going to school. They're not living the lives that they want to lead as teenagers. They're not seeing their friends. So when those children and their parents come to the pediatric pain rehabilitation program, they're 100% of those children are ready to go back to school, go back to seeing their friends, doing all the things that they were doing before through that 3-week program.
I'm imagining people who are listening to this right now thinking maybe a little bit as confused as I am. So I can understand if a child gets hurt when they're playing sports or, you know, whatever their physical actual pain comes from. But when a child, when it's a psychological issue, and I have no doubt that that manifests as pain. I completely understand that because it is painful. What is the difference then between one child maybe will have depression, but the other child has pain? Is that it's just how it manifests the psychological issues that a child needs to deal with or handle? Or is that where that pain comes from? Dr. Bruce, why don't we go there first?
No, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about is pain real or not. And pain is a subjective phenomena, and it really is a sum and total of our experience. If we have a lot of anxiety associated with the pain, it may heighten the pain, but it certainly doesn't cause it. If we have pain for a long time and can't engage in school and sports and friends, we can get dysphoric and depressed. It doesn't mean depression caused it. So I think that those are really important questions because people, and especially the patients that we treat, are really often feeling very devalued or not understood when physicians say, we can't really fix what's wrong with you. Why don't we help you see a psychologist or a psychiatrist? They feel like it's an either-or phenomena. And I think the most important thing that we can say is it's not. The pain is real. It certainly, over time, can be made better or worse by the way that we manage it, the way we live our lives, the sort of lifestyle that we have. So I think that that those are really misconceptions and difficult things for patients to handle.
But it makes sense that then there's things we've got that alternative ways that you can help people through meditation or acupuncture or some of these other things that people might say, well, that's not really, how is that helping with pain medication? How does that work, Dr. Harrison?
So, you know, I think a lot of the other non-pharmacologic things that you can do for your pain, yoga, meditation, diaphragmatic breathing, acupuncture even, can be very, very valuable. Though acupuncture has been around for thousands of years and has helped quite a few people,
sure.
I think what you need to be aware of is that we want you to use different types of strategies that you are able to do yourself and to self-manage your pain. We don't want you to rely on a lot of other providers because that has been found over many of the patients that we've seen in our pain rehabilitation program, that is not effective. So to manage your pain yourself with yoga, meditation, all can be very, very good modalities as individualized for each person.
On my list of myth or matter of fact questions, we've kind of just touched on one of them here. So let's just ask Dr. Bruce, if the cause of pain can't be found, it must be in your head, myth or matter of fact?
You're laughing.
I'm laughing because I think pain is in your head.
Sure.
Our brains are certainly involved in all of our sensations.
And then it can manifest. It can make something actually hurt if it's in your head, correct?
Again, I think that the vast majority of patients, they hurt where they say they hurt.
Sure.
It is not in their head the way that we think of that it's psychological and that that's the cause of pain. And I think that actually that sort of a discussion isn't very helpful for our patients.
Sure.
Because it, again, invalidates the fact that they hurt when in fact they want pain relief. So we say, you hurt where you hurt. And what we want to do is harness everything that we can to help you manage the pain better.
Now, I assume that the patients that you are seeing have all had a complete history and physical examination, and you have not been able to determine the source of the pain, but they still have it.
Well, often they may not be able to determine it, or they have a source of pain. So they have migraine headaches, they have irritable bowel syndrome, they have fibromyalgia, they have a sports injury with real tissue damage that has healed, but the pain persists. So I think that the majority of our patients do have diagnoses, and they still have pain that they have to live with.
But, for example, you've done an MRI scan of their brain, and you know they don't have a brain tumor, for example.
Absolutely.
Now, Dr. Harrison, you mentioned some of the complementary, non-traditional modalities, alternative medicine, it's called. What's your favorite non-traditional modality that you use in conjunction with medications and anything else you use?
So I think the idea of relaxation, diaphragmatic breathing, you know, that's something that I like it because it is so accessible to everyone. Anybody can use that, and that can be very effective, particularly for nausea. If you do that diaphragmatic breathing correctly, it is physically impossible to be able to vomit. So it's very, very effective, very able to use it. Anyone can do that.
And how long does it take you to teach someone that?
So that's a tricky question, but you know, in our pediatric pain rehabilitation program, we start, we introduce that, and people at the end of the program, when I ask them what is one of the things that's most helpful, they will say that diaphragmatic breathing. So it's a matter of practicing every day, even if it's just for 5 minutes or so, maybe a couple of times a day, to do that during the time when you're not having that extreme pain. So when that pain comes about, you are already practiced.
And one of the best things about that is it's non-invasive, right?
Absolutely.
There's no needles, there's no medications.
Absolutely.
All right.
What about visualization? Is that something that works?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And again, in these structured programs, we often introduce multiple ways
sure.
to relax. So yoga, visualization, imagery. Yes.
We just got a tweet from Tia that asks about massage. Is massage a good way that it must work for her? I know that works for me. I have a regular massage appointment. So do you use massage, Dr. Harrison?
So, you know, that's a good question. I think massage can be a wonderful thing. What we don't want it to be is something that you have to rely on. You couldn't go to school unless you had that massage the day before.
Gotcha.
So it can be very helpful, but we don't want it to be something that you'd fall apart if you weren't
gotcha.
Having that.
Yeah, so don't become addicted to massage.
Well, too late. I already am. I love it. I know Dr. Shives doesn't want to know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Myth or matter of fact, women are much better than men when it comes to dealing with pain.
I better answer that.
How about if I
ask
them?
Who's going to take that? Okay.
What do you think, Dr. Harrison?
Well, I think that women might actually be encouraged more to talk about their pain. So we see more adolescent females in our pediatric pain rehabilitation program, same for the adult program. So and women perhaps may have some better resources. I'm not sure. I think that's a really tricky question, but we definitely do see more women in our programs.
So but both pediatric and adults.
Yes.
And maybe it's because they're more willing to go for help.
That is a very good point.
Absolutely. Not a man thing.
Dr. Bruce,
well,
what do you think?
About 7 to 3, really, females to males and adult and the kids. Pain syndrome seem to affect women more. Fibromyalgia, migraine, chronic pelvic pain. There are a lot of pain syndromes that seem to be more prevalent in women. Do they manage it better? I think they may, as Dr. Harrison said, be more willing to ask for help and to look for resources. So we perhaps see more of them in our clinics and in our offices.
Once upon a time, I heard a little story that said redheads feel pain. I can't remember now, are they better at dealing with pain or are they worse at dealing with pain? Is there some truth to that, Dr. Harrison?
Well, interestingly enough, there may be some truth to that. As an anesthesiologist, I mean, just for example, not even involved in the pain clinic, we see that redheaded patients, male or female, who come for surgery oftentimes need more anesthetics, more pain medications afterwards as far as their pain is concerned. So, yeah, there is absolutely some truth to that.
That's
not to say that all redheads need a lot. But
how could that be? So does that mean that there's a hereditary or a genetic link? How could that be, do you suppose?
I'm wondering if there's some particular genetic component there. It's still yet to be determined.
Fascinating.
But we see it frequently.
All right, let's talk a minute about medications. Myth or matter of fact, once you start pain medications, you always have to increase the dose.
So if you're talking about a narcotic medication, which might not be the best for chronic pain, but narcotic medications, patients do develop tolerance over time. So sometimes even though the pain is staying the same, you will need to increase the dose of that opioid just to get the same effect. So that is possible.
What about addiction? Become a huge problem, and people talk about opioids and the crisis that there is of not only older people, but a lot of young people becoming addicted to opioids. You see that as a problem in your practice?
So, you know, I think there's a big misconception. Addiction is actually very, very rare when it comes to pain medications. Pseudo-addiction, that uncontrolled pain or untreated pain, is a problem. But addiction is not a huge problem.
All right, Dr. Tracy Harris and Dr. Barbara Bruce, we're talking about chronic pain. You're listening to Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Radio. Coming up this week's Health and Medical News with Vivian Williams. Right after that, your chance to join our program. There are three ways to do that.
Sure, 507-282-1234. Give us a call or go to our website, radio.mayoclinic.org. And of course, we're already taking your tweets at hashtag Mayo Radio. This is Medical Edge Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network.
Hi, I'm Vivian Williams with headlines from the Mayo Clinic News Network. Here's some info that could help encourage women to quit smoking. Postmenopausal women who kick the habit reduce their risk of heart disease regardless of whether they had diabetes. That's from a study in the Journal of the American Medical Association by researchers at the Indiana University School of Public Health, Bloomington. They found if you quit smoking, even if you're older, the benefits start fast, within years. Here's some of those benefits. Women without diabetes who quit within the past 3 years had a 26% lower risk of developing heart disease compared to women who continued smoking. Women who had quit smoking for more than 3 years had a 61% lower risk, and among women with diabetes, those who quit smoking had about a 60% lower risk for heart disease regardless of how recently they had quit. Researchers say it's never too late to quit smoking. And in other news, summertime has many of us getting out and getting active. That means we may see some of the maladies that come with aggressive exercise. A common concern is a Baker's cyst. It's basically just an outpouching of fluid on the back of the knee, ranging in size from 1 to 6 centimeters or larger. While there can be many causes, Baker's cysts are generally a symptom of some type of injury or arthritis within the knee joint. Mayo Clinic orthopedic surgeon Dr. Diane Dom says she sees Baker's cysts in the MRI scans of 30 to 40% of patients being treated for knee pain, but they are no cause for alarm.
Have people decrease the amount of impact activity that they're doing. You want to move to a lower impact exercise program and then undertake measures that will decrease swelling in the knee joint. For example, using a compression sleeve, using ice to decrease swelling. And so as you decrease the swelling in the knee joint, you'll in turn decrease the swelling in the Baker's cyst. If you're treating a Baker's cyst, the most important thing is to try to figure out what's going in the joint, what's going on inside the joint that may be causing this, be it arthritis, meniscal tears, cartilage tears, inflammatory disease. Treat that, And almost always you'll have resolution of your symptoms.
And here's news about young people and who may be most likely to indulge in underage drinking. Scientists at the University of Liverpool found young people who show impulsive tendencies are more prone to drinking heavily at an early age. The research suggests that targeting personality traits such as impulsivity could potentially be a successful intervention in preventing problems with alcohol later in life. Now, their study showed kids who were more impulsive in a series of computerized tests went on to drink more heavily or have problems with alcohol later. They say next steps are to take these results and apply them to prevention interventions that are tailored to individual characteristics such as impulsivity. And that's a look at headlines from the Mayo Clinic News Network. I'm Vivian Williams.
Welcome back to Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Radio. Information you want from specialists who know, on air, online. You can also get us on iHeartRadio on your smart, but not smarter than you, Tracy, phone.
No.
So you can take us anywhere. We are with chronic pain specialist Dr. Barbara Bruce and Dr. Tracy Harrison, and it is time for you to join our program. And one of the ways to do that is our telephone, 507-282-1234. And two of our callers today will receive a complimentary copy of the book called Mayo Clinic Guide to Pain Relief, How to Manage, Reduce, and Control Chronic Pain. 507-282-1234. Now, one of the editors of the book is Dr. Barbara Bruce, along with Dr. Michael Hooten. And I don't want to suggest that this book is out of date, but there is a new edition coming out later in the year, and the editors will be Dr. Barbara Bruce and our other guest, Dr. Tracy Harrison. 507-282-1234. A question about chronic pain.
Or you can contact us at our website, radio.mayoclinic.org, or tweet us at hashtag Mayo Radio.
But first, you probably heard the story this week about the HPV vaccine. Now, we know that HPV causes the majority of cases of cervical cancer. And for a few years, there has been available a vaccine to prevent infection with HPV and thereby prevent cervical cancer. Sounds like a no-brainer, doesn't it?
It does.
But a new study this week out from the Mayo Clinic suggests that a fair number of parents are suggesting or refusing to have their daughters and their sons vaccinated with the HPV vaccine. Yeah. Well, one of the authors of the study, Dr. Robert Jacobson, he's on the line with us. Good morning, Dr. Jacobson. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So the study showed, tell us what the study showed.
Well, the study reviewing surveys of parents from 2008 to 2010 showed what parents were considering about teenage vaccines, and particularly and alarmingly so, an increasing rate of parents intending not to vaccinate their teens against HPV. That rate grew from 40 to 44% over 3 years.
What has parents concerned?
Well, there are a number of concerns. They don't think the vaccine is needed. They think the vaccine, increasingly so, over that time period, 4 to 16% parents reported that they thought it was unsafe. They thought that their children were too young. They felt their clinicians weren't recommending the vaccines. All of these are very concerning because they're really quite the opposite of what we recommend, as well as what we know and what we expected parents to be considering over these years. We've had the vaccine now available since 2005. Millions and millions of girls and boys have received the vaccine. It has proven safe. It has proven effective. And frankly, very much needed. Approximately 50% of all U.S. residents will eventually acquire the HPV vaccine. And while most people will clear it, some will develop a precancerous and then cancerous lesions, leading to about 22,000 cases of cancer from this virus every year in the United States.
So there is no question in your mind or your colleague's mind that this is something that teenage girls and boys, right, ought to receive. And the reason that they need to get it when they're so young is because it's a sexually transmitted disease. And if you you have to get the vaccine before you're exposed, right?
Yes.
Once you're exposed, the vaccine does no good.
Right. And we're recommending that the vaccine actually be given years and years before exposure because, frankly, children between 9 and 12 have a much better immune response to the vaccine than waiting to 15 or 16 years of age or waiting till 18 to 20 years of age. So it's not just a matter of making sure we get the vaccine in before a person becomes sexually active. It's taking advantage of the body's immune response at the best possible time to get the most effect of this vaccine.
Well, it sounds like we need to get the message out, and hopefully this will help.
I hope so. We are seeing an increased conversation among parents and clinicians as a result of the article. It's, I think a lot of people were taken by the results, and we are putting some things in place both at the state and at the national level to help clinicians and parents engage in conversations to understand why this is being recommended as routinely as, say, the Tdap vaccine or the polio vaccine.
All right, Dr. Jacobson, thanks so much for being with us.
Very welcome. Thank you.
All right, so we could solve the cervical cancer problem almost with this vaccine.
It's a cancer vaccine.
Exactly. And now, and there aren't many of those out there,
oh,
that's for
goodness.
Sure. We got to now solve the pain problem.
Oh, let's do that in the
and
next
by the
10
way,
minutes.
Our telephone number, once again, 507-282-1234. Two of our callers will get a complimentary copy of the Mayo Clinic Guide to Pain Relief. And one of the medical editors is one of our guests, Dr. Barbara Bruce. Our other guest, Dr. Tracy Harrison. Both of them here to answer your questions on pain. And
well, I was just going to say, we haven't touched on the acute versus chronic pain question. Dr. Harrison, what's the difference between those two?
So acute pain is, say, for example, you sustain an injury, you slip off the curb, you twist your ankle, you've got that acute pain, and you take it easy for a couple of days, and over time, you know, you get an evaluation if that's needed, and over time, that just gets better. And actually, that acute pain is actually a good thing in your body. It's preventing you from doing more harm to your body by more activity. Chronic pain, on the other hand, is something that occurs after about 3 months or so. So daily pain for at least 3 months or more. And the problem is that doesn't serve any particular good function for you. In other words, you may decide that you need to kind of lay low, take it easy, and it 1 week then becomes into 3 weeks where you're kind of laying low, and over a period of time you're just withdrawing from so many different things.
You had said before we got started, one of the key points is that you want to make sure people don't change their life based on their pain.
Absolutely.
Makes them not want to go to the football game, makes them not want to go shopping, makes them not want to. So that's kind of a mixed message there, though. If you break,
right.
If you step
sure.
off and twist your ankle, then you do lay low and don't go do those things.
Absolutely. And that's over a few days. And
sure.
Like I said, that's, you know, you go to your physician, you get their idea. Is there anything that is structurally wrong that I'm going to do harm by walking on it? And then that's an issue, you know, where you can kind of just lay low. If it becomes a longer period of time, the problem is that even after 3 months, 6 months, people sometimes have gone to so many different physicians that their doctors will start to say, well, you know what? I know school is really stressful for you. Maybe you should stop going to school for a while until we sort this out. And I think that's one of the most damaging things that physicians can do. And they do it with the good of their heart. They want to help these children
sure.
as much as possible. But it can be very detrimental because then you withdraw from your social activities, you don't see your friends, and then you start to get some of that loneliness. And it can really add to some more of those mood issues that only makes that pain worse.
All right, 507-282-1234. Phone lines are open, and you get a boot to book. Called the,
what?
A
book to boot?
Boot to boot, yeah.
Flip that around.
A book to boot.
There you go.
All right, Mayo Clinic Guide to Pain Relief. How to manage, reduce, and control your chronic pain.
All right, let's go. Fred has a question about back pain. Good morning, Fred. Welcome to the air. Go right ahead with your question. Hello? Hello, Fred. Go right ahead with your question.
I have a question about my back. I have a pain there because I think one of the vertebrae is deteriorating, but now it seems to be spreading in the, toward the kidneys. And it's livable, but not comfortable. And when I sit, it's fine.
So what is your question?
Is there something that can be done about that?
Yeah, now I suspect that you have seen a some sort of back specialist, an orthopedic surgeon or a chiropractor or whatever, and tried those treatments, and have they helped at all?
haven't tried anything. Well, I guess I tried a chiropractor once and it didn't help at all.
Dr. Harrison, what would you suggest that Fred try first?
You see this all the time, I'm sure. People with chronic back pain for which there is no good medical answer or surgical answer.
Absolutely. And the frustration is that sometimes people have tried some things. So I think my suggestion to you would be to there might be some medications that your doctor has suggested. I think it's important to kind of keep, in contact with those providers. And the goal is, ideally, we want that pain to completely go away. But if we can decrease it somewhat, that is a good thing. And I would just take your doctor's advice as far as if he's thought about physical therapy. And I would urge you to continue with that, because even if you don't see some improvements right away, that's a good thing that you're doing, to be some level of physical activity on a daily basis.
All right, Fred, I want you to know on page 34 of your new book, there it says back pain. So we're going to send that to you.
Yep,
hopefully that'll help. Hang
Fred
on the line. We'll get your address.
Yep. Audrey will get your address, Fred. So thank you for calling in. Lorraine has got a question about acupuncture. Good morning, Lorraine.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just wondered, what are your thoughts for chronic pain? What are your thoughts about acupuncture?
Very good question. I think that can be a good modality. I mean, sometimes we use a number of different treatments for chronic pain. I think acupuncture, the experience that I've had, is that those practitioners can be very, very good. Again, the expectation is that perhaps they can help to decrease your pain somewhat. Acupuncture can be very helpful even for sleep, for relaxation, just for lots of different things. So I think if you see a provider who is willing to treat you and says, you know what, let's try a number of treatments, let's try maybe 6 to 10 of those treatments, and if you go to them regularly, and over a period of time, they'll say, do you think I'm helping you? Because really, you don't want to continue with something that is not of help to you. And acupuncturists do a very, very nice job of doing so. They will say, I think that I'm helping you. Yes, let's continue. Or what are your thoughts
sure.
of how I'm helping?
Lorraine, if you'll hold on, Audrey will grab your address and we'll send you a copy of that book as well.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hold
Thanks,
on.
Lorraine.
Thank you.
All right. Let's continue along. 282-1234. June is on the line. She has a question. Good morning, June. Go right ahead. Hello?
Well, I think maybe we're hooking June up.
No,
is there a tweet there?
We'll just hold on just
yeah,
a moment.
Right.
We've got a
lot. Let's wait for June.
Well, there's
She's
a lot of yeah. tweets, actually. How effective is RF nerve ablation at treating chronic pain? What is that?
Mm. So it's a radio frequency nerve ablation. So it's basically addressing the nerve roots that supply that particular dermatome mm-hmm. or that particular location of pain in your body. Radio frequency ablation can be, again, a part of your treatment for chronic pain. The problem is that if you have some decrease in pain over a period of time, unfortunately, that nerve that is burned, for lack sure. of a better word, to decrease the pain, some of those fibers will start to grow back. And when they grow back, they can sometimes grow back in a little bit of a funny way to maybe contribute to a little
sure.
bit more pain. So again, it's a modality
sure.
that you can combine with other things, and your doctor would decide if that was a good modality for you.
Yeah, and certainly something to consider and something you use, right?
Certainly, absolutely, yep. yes.
All right, let's try June. Good morning, June. Do you have a question for our doctors?
Yes.
Go right ahead.
My daughter had both of her legs were broken and she had surgery and everything, but they weren't set right. Mm. And I was just wondering about if I could.
If there's anything
to do about that, anything. I don't think there's anything you can do unless they re-break them, and she would never want to go through that again.
Is she an adult or a child?
Adult.
And how long ago did that happen?
Last year,
okay.
a year ago, February 18th.
Okay. Any
thoughts? You should be
June?
A doctor. You ask all the right mm-hmm. questions.
Well, I just
June,
want to get to the story.
Yeah, sorry to hear about that, but I suspect that the first thing to do is follow up with your orthopedic surgeon. And fractures take a long time to heal, and it may be that she's going to get better on her own with a little more time. And there may be some surgical options, but if there are not, then certainly a chronic pain specialist might you might want to get them involved, don't you think, Dr. Bruce?
You know, the other thing that to consider might be a pain rehabilitation center program. It's a program that's structured to help people manage pain that we don't have good answers for. So if the pain were to persist, it's really focused on improving quality of life, back to activity, back to her interests and things that she wants to do so that she can have a full and active life despite whatever residual pain continues.
All right. Thanks for calling in, June.
Yeah, she's from Albany, Minnesota.
Excellent. Wow. Dr. Harrison, we have a list that you provided of 10 tips for living with chronic pain. Let's go through, maybe we'll have time for all 10 of them, but what are some good tips for dealing with chronic pain?
So I think, you know, one of the things that we've talked about already is the fact that really trying to stay as active as you can and really as normal a life as possible. I think that's one of the most important things.
So you don't, in general, recommend that people interrupt their regular routine. You want to keep people active and keep leading their lives.
Absolutely. And I think you have to be pretty proactive when you go to your physician. I mean, that's the part of the patient, because your doctors will try to do everything they can to help to minimize your pain. We understand that chronic pain is a complex issue, and we may not be able to eliminate that pain completely, but staying active is one of the best things that you can do, leading your life normally.
Number one on your tips list.
Number one on my tips list is staying active. And so, you know, different strategies as far as relaxation, taking time for yourself is very important. So learning deep breathing, some meditation that really kind of helps to get your body relaxed can be a very good one. Reducing the stress. So even if we say about maintaining your normal lifestyle, you know, sometimes some of the kids that come to our pediatric pain program, they're very busy in school, honors courses. They're really kind of overextended. So I really think it's important to take a look at really trying to normalize that as much as possible, so they can have a good balance of activities.
Dr. Bruce, were there some things that you, on your end as the psychologist, want to offer people as for tips or things that you are... and thoughts that you have?
You know, I just want to reiterate what Dr. Shives and Harrison have both said. I think that function. We see kids who have been out of school up to 2 years. You know, they're only 15. You know, the developmental things that they've missed, the social interactions, the academic endeavors. So we really want to see adults and kids remain in their roles, remain active. It is so seductive to say go to bed and rest until you feel better. And that's good for acute pain, as we said, but when you get to chronic pain, you may never feel better or all the way better. So to maintain functioning is so important. That's the top of my list.
What do you do with something like fibromyalgia, which is just a unknown cause of pain, a disease that is pain? What do you do with something like that? How do you help
someone? Well, that's a whole other program.
Yeah, I guess it is. We are running out of time, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. Our guests, Dr. Barbara Bruce and Dr. Tracy Harrison, both pain specialists. They both work in the pain clinic, and a particular emphasis on kids with pain. Great. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much
for having us.
You're listening to Medical Edge Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network. Coming up, we'll tell you about next week's program. Stay with us. Welcome back. Next week on Mayo Clinic Radio, we'll talk with the director of the Nicotine Dependence Center, Dr. Richard Hurt. In addition to being founder and director of the Nicotine Dependence Center, he is a consultant to the Hong Kong Department of Health and other ministries of health.
He was also the first witness in the historic Minnesota tobacco trial almost a decade ago.
And he has authored or co-authored over 200 scientific publications on nicotine dependence.
You know, and maybe I should bake a cake, because this is going to be kind of a celebration. The Nicotine Dependence Center has been in existence for over 25 years.
Yep, hard to believe. Now, Dr. Hurt is also the driving force and founder of an organization called Global Bridges, and it's to help professionals around the globe treat their citizens who are addicted to tobacco, a worldwide effort to treat tobacco dependence. How's the effort going?
What are the latest and the best ways to stop smoking and to stop chewing, including some of the reasons why you should, if you're not quite sure?
And Dr. Hurt's got a lot of reasons, let me tell you. Overcoming the Nicotine Addiction, next week on Mayo Clinic Radio.
We hope you'll join us. For more information on topics discussed on this program, please visit our website, radio.mayoclinic.org, where you can access a podcast of today's program, as well as previously aired shows. Or you can visit us at mayoclinic.com, where over 3,000 physicians, scientists, and researchers from Mayo Clinic share their expertise to empower you to better manage your health.
You've been listening to Mayo Clinic Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network. Our senior producer is Ron Petrovich. Our associate producer and phone screener, Audrey Castletine. Our technical director, Andy Brownell. Our theme music was written and performed by Chip Davis of Mannheim Steamroller. For Mayo Clinic Radio, I'm Dr. Tom Shives.
And I'm Tracy McRae.
Thanks for listening.